This is the Menendez Brothers, Quest for Justice from the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today.
All right, ready to dive into a case that's had people talking for decades.
The Menendez Brothers. Let's do it.
You sent over some really fascinating stuff. We've got the Wikipedia overview, of course, and a good piece from history.com to set the scene. But I have to say, Dominic Dunn's article in Vanity Fair, that one really got to me.
Oh, Dunn was a master of this world, wasn't he? The world the Menendez family lived in, that whole high society scene. He knew how to peel back the layers.
Exactly. For those not familiar, Dunn was a writer and journalist very well known for covering these big, often scandalous court cases, especially when the wealthy and powerful were involved.
He had a knack for getting to the heart of the drama, that's for sure.
And he starts this piece with this encounter on an airplane, overhears a teenager say that anyone would kill their parents given a rough enough upbringing. Really makes you think, right, what does that say about how we view these things?
Such a smart way to start the story, because right away Dunn's telling you this isn't just some open and shut case. It's about our perceptions of family, of wealth, of whether some acts are ever justified no matter what.
Okay, so let's rewind to August 20th, 1989. Picture this. A Beverly Hills mansion. We're talking the kind of place that practically defines affluence on Elm Drive, no less. Inside, Jose and Kitty Menendez are brutally murdered in their own den.
This wasn't just any murder, though, was it?
14 shotgun blasts. Not your typical crime scene.
No, not at all. And the level of violence in this case is really significant. It's one of the things that elevates it beyond a simple murder-for-money plot. That kind of brutality usually points to something much deeper, something much more personal.
Dunn doesn't hold back on those details either. He describes the scene, the blood, the sheer violence of it all. It's like something out of a movie.
And it makes you think about Jose Menendez himself, right?
Yeah.
This self-made millionaire. Mm-hmm. He built this empire, achieved that classic American dream, only to die in such a brutal, almost cinematic way.
It does make you think.
This shattering of the ideal, like the American dream itself gets warped, becomes a nightmare playing out in this mansion that suddenly feels more like a gilded cage.
And then the plot thickens, because after their parents are murdered, Lyle and Eric go on this, well, it's almost a spending spree.
Mm.
Trips, designer clothes. Lyle even buys himself a Porsche.
A Porsche.
Yeah, and a restaurant. You almost wonder if they wanted to get caught, you know?
It is pretty strange behavior, you have to admit. If you're trying to avoid suspicion, that's the last thing you do. In fact, this kind of spending often leads investigators right to the suspects.
It really makes you question their state of mind at the time. Were they in shock or denial, maybe? Or was there something else going on? A need to overcompensate, perhaps?
Interesting question. It could suggest, psychologically, a subconscious desire to get caught, maybe driven by guilt or a need for punishment.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe even a skewed sense of reality, like they somehow believed they had gotten away with it and this was their reward.
And then there are these whispers about something even darker going on within the family. Dunn mentions hearing the word incest whispered in connection with the case, this idea of potential abuse.
That's where the motive really starts to shift away from simple greed, doesn't it? And it gets into much murkier territory. The brothers ultimately claim they acted in self-defense,
yeah,
alleging years of abuse from their parents.
Right, and we'll dive into that a bit more later.
Yeah.
But you can see how just the possibility of abuse adds a whole other dimension to this story. It makes you ask, could someone be driven to that level of violence, that specific act, by years of trauma?
It's a question a lot of people grappled with, for sure.
And then there's another figure who enters the picture of the brothers' therapist, Dr. Oziel. He'd been treating them before the murders, and what he did or didn't know became a big focus.
Well, Oziel becomes a pretty major player in this whole thing, because as it turns out, he'd been secretly recording his sessions with the brothers. And those tapes, with their confessions, their discussions of the murders, they were crucial to the prosecution's case.
It's such an ethically complicated situation, isn't it? I mean,
yeah,
you have the whole therapist-patient confidentiality thing. But then, Ozzy claimed the brothers had threatened him, threatened his family. So what do you do in that situation?
It's a real ethical tightrope walk, that's for sure. Oziel's decision to record the sessions, it's understandable given the circumstances, but it definitely raises questions about whether he was acting in his patient's best interests or just trying to protect himself. It makes things a lot less clear-cut.
It does. And that leads us to the brothers' defense. They claim self-defense, right? Alleging years of abuse that they said led them to kill their parents.
And their attorney, Leslie Abramson, she was a force in that courtroom.
Yeah.
argued passionately that the brothers were victims, pushed to a desperate act.
Abrams had even called them adorable, like two foundlings, which seems hard to reconcile with the brutality of what happened, right?
Yeah, it does. And I think that's where public opinion starts to fracture a little. It becomes this lightning rod, this case. People debating about wealth, privilege, and how far is too far, even in self-defense. It's tough to reconcile these seemingly privileged young men with such a horrific act.
Absolutely. And through it all, there's Dominic Dunn capturing every detail, every twist and turn, trying to make sense of it all himself, you know?
And we can't forget, Dunn wasn't just an objective bystander in all of this. His own daughter had been murdered a few years earlier. And you can feel the weight of that experience in his writing. His empathy for victims of violence.
You really can, yeah. It adds another level to his writing, for sure.
It reminds us that even in these sensational cases, we're dealing with real people, real lives, with layers and complexities that go way beyond the headlines.
So we've got this huge, complicated case. A brutal crime in a wealthy family, rumors of a darker family secret, this controversial therapist and his secret tapes. It's no wonder the trial turned into a media circus.
It had all the ingredients for a tabloid sensation. Wealth, privilege, and that age-old question, can money buy you anything, even freedom from the worst crimes?
And when the brothers claimed self-defense, alleging physical and even sexual abuse, it really threw fuel on the fire, didn't it? But did Dunn buy it? Did those claims resonate with him, do you think?
That's what's so interesting. Even Dunn, with his own personal experience with violence, with his capacity for empathy, he seems genuinely conflicted. He acknowledges their claims, but he also points out inconsistencies. And there's a lack of physical evidence, too, which he doesn't shy away from.
It's almost like he wanted a straight answer, you know, a clear-cut truth. But with a case like this, it's never that simple, is it?
No, it's never that simple. And that's what keeps people coming back to this case, even now. Were they victims pushed too far? Or were they cunning, manipulative, hiding behind a good story?
Speaking of manipulation, let's circle back to Judilyn Smith for a moment, Dr. Oziel's ex-lover. She goes to the police claiming the brothers confessed to her, and the tapes seem to back her up.
Right, but Smith herself, she's a whole other layer of complexity in this story, isn't she? Her motives, her inconsistencies, it even compares her to a character out of Fatal Attraction. Alluring, but capable of real deception.
It's like this added layer of smoke and mirrors, you know? Makes it even harder to figure out who to trust, what really happened.
And it takes us right back to Dunn's opening scene, that conversation on the airplane. If some people believe a rough childhood is enough to justify murder, what does that say about us? About our endless fascination with this case?
It's a question that sticks with you long after the trials are over. We're left with these unanswered questions, wondering what truly happened in that Beverly Hills mansion. And here's one last thing to consider after everything, the house where it all happened. It was eventually rented out to a Saudi prince. It's like this enduring symbol of wealth and privilege, forever tied to this darkness. Does that change how you see it all? The brothers, their parents, even ourselves, trying to make sense of it. The Menendez case, with all its twists and turns, it continues to fascinate, to disturb, because it forces us to confront our own ideas about justice, family, and the dark side of the American dream.
Want to know more about the Menendez brothers? Just search the Menendez brothers Quest for Justice wherever you get podcasts and press subscribe. From the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today,